before we begin the talk. Let's take a moment and cultivate our motivation. And remember that in cyclic existence, there's no ultimate happiness to be found. That in this cycle of birth, aging, sickness, and death, we may have a little temporal pleasure, but it doesn't last long. And in the meantime, through being attached to pleasure, getting angry at whatever interferes with our happiness, that we create a lot of destructive karma that keeps us going around in cyclic existence. So really seeing what a trap, what a prison cyclic existence is, let's have the determination to free ourselves from it. And recalling that all other living beings are in that same situation, let's develop the intention to free them as well. And to do this most effectively, so that it's not the blind leading the blind, we need to develop all the realizations of the path and develop all the qualities of a fully awakened being. And so we generate the intention to attain full awakening for the benefit of all living beings. And so let's make that our motivation for our sharing the evening together today. In the modern age, you know, when you first hear the title, you think, well, why would it be different than morality in the ancient age? Yeah, I mean, the 10 paths of non-virtue are the same, sentient beings' minds are the same, you know, the afflictions haven't changed. No matter what historical time we live in, we have the same afflictions and we're prone to creating the same kind of destructive karma. So initially it seems like, well, you know, not much difference. So in one way it's true, there isn't much difference. But in another way, I was thinking about it and we have lots more ways to create negativity nowadays. Yeah? Many more ways. A whole variety. Yeah, that we didn't have in the past. So let's just look at the, if we go through the 10 paths of non-virtue and see, you know, how it's possible to create those in the modern age that maybe wasn't possible before. Okay, so first one, killing. Yeah. We have all sorts of new weapons now, don't we? Yeah. Before in the past, if you wanted to kill, you know, you had to make a bow and an arrow, or, you know, get a really heavy rock and, you know, really beat somebody over the head with it. Yeah, or push someone off a cliff, or, you know, like that. Now, yeah, you out a gun. I mean, and a lot of the examples I'm giving, I'll be using my country as an example. Fortunately, Singapore has better laws. Okay. But in my country, you know, if you want to own an AK-47 or an AR-14, a military rifle that, you know, you can just go like in the movies, you can legally do that. Okay. I think it's a crazy policy, but there's a lot of people who are very attached to their guns. And so we have this whole new way of killing that can happen just in ordinary society when you're walking down the road. Yeah. And it can happen deliberately, it can happen accidentally, just by owning these arms. In a town not too far from the abbey where we live, there was a woman who had a handgun in her purse. It was supposedly a purse that was childproof. She was wheeling her child in a basket, a shopping basket through, I think it was Walmart or Kmart, one of the, you know, regular kind of stores that you go to. And her child, who was a toddler, managed to open her bag, took out the gun, didn't know what it was, I mean, it was just a baby, and pulled the trigger and accidentally killed his mother. Yeah. Horrendous, you know, quite a tragedy. So, you know, this is new ways of killing each other, even accidentally, that come about through automation and, you know, having different kinds of weapons. Okay, that's the first one. Okay. Also, I mean, so many new ways to have accidents now when you have buses and planes and, I mean, that flight from KL to Beijing, remember? They still don't know, but it seems like perhaps the pilot might have wanted to do something, you know? And definitely the Lufthansa flight, do you remember that one last year? That where the pilot definitely, it seems like, was, it wasn't Lufthansa, it was an affiliate airline way with Lufthansa. But anyway, the pilot, you know, had been reading materials about suicide and he banged the whole plane into the side of the French Alps when he was flying from Spain into Germany, killing a lot of people, including a lot of children who had gone on a trip from Germany to Spain. So, you know, new ways of killing people. Yeah. Same morality, I mean, in terms of, where to abandon killing, and same afflictions such as anger or depression, but now a variety of ways to commit those. Okay. Then, let's look at stealing, the next one. Yeah. What do you think about stealing? Here's one. We're Singaporeans, know about it. Yeah. And I'm not talking about stealing, breaking into someone's flat, because you people have so many locks on your flat, it's impossible to get in, even if you live there. I'm talking about white collar crime. Yeah? Taking bribes. I know Singaporeans don't do that. But I've heard from a number of people who do business, Singaporeans who do business here, that when they go to other countries, I won't mention the name of the other country because I might get in trouble, but when they do business in that other country, I think you all know what I'm talking about, they have to pay bribes, or it's not bribes, it's you give a gift, right? Yeah, you have an opportunity to practice generosity and create merit to generosity. And you just coincidentally close the business deal, right? Yeah? Right? So that's a way of getting involved, isn't it? No? Corporations, you know, do that a lot. Yeah, this time not just in my country, but in some places around here. And yeah? And, you know, it's not legal, but so many people say, but if I'm going to close the business deal, I have to do that. And then, of course, embezzling money from the company, yeah, using company materials that aren't ours, yeah, but taking them for personal use. So... No, it's another way of stealing, isn't it? Yeah. Do you use the term white collar and blue collar here? Yeah, okay. So a lot of white collar crime. Mm-hmm. Okay. Again, my country may be better at that than your country, but maybe not. So, you know, just something to think about. Then, the third one. Yeah, unwise and unkind sexual behavior. Again, so many new ways to do this. In the past, it was basically just adultery. You know, you're in a relationship, you go with somebody outside of it. Yeah, or you're single and you go with somebody who is in a relationship. Yeah, or, you know, you have sex with a child or somebody who is under, you know, their parents' authority. But actually, you know, in ancient times, in many situations, it was legal to have sex with a child. It was accepted in society. So maybe now we're a little bit better, you know, and we have laws about pedophilia, and that's discouraged. But we still have many of the same things that happened in ancient times, you know, prostitution still exists. And now, you know, what they often do in very poor countries, they sell their daughters into prostitution. The family's poor. They can't support another child. So sometimes the girl tries to go to the city to get a job. But actually what winds up is that she's being sold into prostitution, sometimes really as young girls, yeah, which must be incredibly traumatic for them. I can't even imagine being a young girl and being in that kind of situation where you have no freedom and your life is governed by a pimp who is expecting you to turn many tricks each night so that he can take a cut of it and make a lot of money. Yeah. So they usually, what's interesting is they usually blame women for prostitution. I don't think a whole lot of women say, I want to grow up to be a prostitute. Yeah? I really don't think so. Yeah. I think it's poverty that forces them into it. And when there's demand, there's supply. So the demand is coming from the men, isn't it? Yeah. So when police, you know, do raids, I think they should be arresting the men and not the young girls. Rather, they should take the young girls and help them learn a good skill and give them some therapy because they're surely traumatized. Okay. But the whole way prostitution is done nowadays, yeah? Well, people are much better at doing prostitution rings. I don't know if you have the problem, but in my country, sometimes when teenagers are not being treated properly at home, or if there's a lot of drugs and alcohol going on at home, then the kids will run away to the city. Here, there's not much place for the kids to run away to, but in my country, there's a lot of place. And they wind up going to the city. The pimps wait at the bus stops, the bus stations, looking for young girls who look rather lost and confused. And then they pretend to be a friend to them and in that way lure them into prostitution. Yeah. So, modern ways of doing things, isn't it? Similarly, I think now, STDs, sexually transmitted diseases, are much more prevalent in society than in ancient times. And so it seems to me that unprotected sex would be included in the, breaking the third precept. And so people need to be careful about that because, yeah, in my mind, if you have unprotected sex and you infect somebody else with a sexually transmitted disease, that's not going to be good karma, is it? Yeah, so people need to take care of that nowadays. Yeah, new way to break the third, to go against that that thing of avoiding unwise and unkind sexual behavior. Now, that didn't exist in the past. Okay, so those are the three physical ones. Yeah, then the four verbal ones. Yeah, so the first one, lying. So again, people not telling the truth for personal gain. That happened in old times, it happens now. But again, now we have so many new ways of lying. Yeah, so many new ways of lying. In fact, there was just, in the States, there's this whole thing happening now about fake news. And because of the internet, people can make up whatever kind of news they want and make all sorts of false allegations against other people, put it on Facebook or Twitter, and it gets spread around. It's clearly a lie. Yeah. But people believe it and people retweet it. Yeah. And spread it around. So, of course, the foremost example of saying untrue things is one man who is going to assume a very important office in my country, who is not setting a very good example about telling the truth, but instead says whatever he wants, true or false. So what happened earlier this week, the son of the man who our next president is going to appoint as the Secretary of Defense, okay, his son and the father who's going to be the Secretary of Defense retweeted it, said that there was a certain pizza shop in Washington, D.C., where Hillary Clinton was running a ring of children of pedophilia, and child prostitution. This guy made up this story It's not true at all. But made it up, put it on Facebook, his father and other people retweeted it. Yeah. Got all over the place. And one man in North Carolina was very upset when he thought about there being a pedophilia ring. And so he took his AK-47 and he went to the pizza shop in Washington, D.C. with his assault rifle to check out the situation because he was going to rescue those children. Thank goodness. Yeah, I think he might have fired one shot, but nobody was hurt. But he got there and he learned that no, there was no pedophilia ring started by Hillary Clinton at the pizza shop. Yeah, but he got arrested. Yeah, and he's in jail now, he's charged. And the son who was spreading this false rumor, he got fired from Trump's transition campaign, even though one person in, not commission, not the cabinet, the transition team, okay? So he was, even though one person said, on the transition team, said he wasn't on the transition team, somebody else said he was. But anyway, the guy got fired, thank goodness, okay? But could you imagine what it what could have happened if that other man, I mean, thank goodness they arrested him, but if he had gone in there and just started, you know, shooting because he assumed that there was a child prostitution ring there, you know, just because somebody thought it was fun to make up lies and especially blame them on their political opponents. Ghastly, isn't it? Yeah. So new ways of making up lies and spreading lies very quickly and very effectively. Yeah. Because of the internet. Going back to stealing, yeah. On the way here, we were talking about your cash cards. Yeah, and how, you know, things get deducted from them. So it sounds like you have a good system for catching people who try and, you know, steal and not have things deducted. But I'm sure there's probably some people who have a really good way of avoiding it. Yeah. Maybe some of you? I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that. Okay, but that's relating to stealing. Okay, so we've covered killing, stealing, unwise and unkind sexual behavior, lying. Okay, then the next one is creating disharmony with our speech. Okay, so again, similar to olden times, where, you know, you just talk about people behind their back and you ruin their reputations and you start disharmony, you know. You make people who are friends quarrel and you make people who are not getting along continue to not get along. But again, nowadays with the internet, we have new special ways of doing this. Yeah? Again, Facebook. Yeah, you can write anything you want on Facebook. You know, destroy other people's relationships because you're jealous. You write on somebody's page. Again, it's lying and creating disharmony. Or maybe it's not lying, it's telling the truth, but you're blabbing it, you know, all over the world. And making people quarrel, making people who aren't getting along continue not to get along. Yeah. So again, very prominent in society, you know? If you look, oh my goodness, you know? What my country just went through in the election season, it was so painful. Yeah, because speech was so often used in a bigoted, hateful way to create disharmony. Yeah, and to bring all these people who are white supremacists, make them feel that their bigoted, racist views are now societally acceptable. And so now there's been a rise of hate crimes in the country because of people creating disharmony with their speech and with their fingertips. And the thing is, with the internet now, you can do things anonymously. Yeah, you can ruin somebody's reputation and nobody even knows who you are. Similarly, if we go back to lying, another way we can lie is I hear about all these dating apps that people have, you know, and you go on a dating app and you fill it all out, you put a picture of yourself, what you used to look like when you weighed 100 pounds less than you were 10 years younger, you know, and you put that picture up, that's lying, isn't it? Yeah, and then you can create this whole personality on your dating profile, and you are not that person at all. Yeah, and you can start correspondences with people, you know, from the dating app when you... You know, I've never seen one. I just read about this, okay? I have enough problems without a boyfriend. I can't imagine having, you know? Why would you want a boyfriend? Yeah. I mean, don't you have enough problems? So, anyway, you know, people go on there, and then they make up all these hobbies, they make up this personality, yeah, they put on a picture that isn't what they really look like now. They start dialogues with other people, you know, on the app and lead them on, yeah, by the way they talk and, you know, inducing people and creating a relationship online. Pretending to be somebody who you aren't, but in a way that gets other people interested in you. And even people fall in love over the internet, but the whole thing is very deceptive. Yeah. So many new ways to lie and cheat now. Yeah. Look what digital formatting has brought to us. Yeah, if we don't have good ethical standards, wow. Okay, then harsh speech. Yeah, the next verbal one. So, you know, lying, creating disharmony. Third verbal one is harsh speech. Again, on Facebook, yeah, you can go tell people off. You can break up relationships. You don't feel like telling somebody face-to-face that you want to break up. So you just do it, you know, you tweet them or you do it on Facebook. You know, somebody's very fond of you, very attached to you. You don't want to have to deal with their hurt feelings. So what do? You break up online. You break up by text message. Yeah. Because now you can write anything you want and not take responsibility for the other person's emotional reaction because you don't need to be there to see it. You just text them and then they read it on their own. So again, you know, in my country, I guess I'm not the person who's advertising my country in a good light. You know, I don't think they'll hire me for the, you know, the tourist bureau of the U.S. Take people around to see the Statue of Liberty, and I'd say, you know, Statue of Liberty's crying these days. Anyway, so where was I? Yes, saying all sorts of hateful things on Facebook. So now youngsters do that to each other, and especially children, you know, young teens and teenagers. Do you remember when you were that age, how sensitive you were, you know, and like so worried, what do other people think of me? Do my friends like me? Do they not like me? Do I fit in with other people? I mean, teenagers, they're out to lunch because they're so worried about all this stuff, yeah? So other teenagers can just write all sorts of mean things on Facebook or, you know, text message somebody these things, and another person is just distraught and destroyed, thinking that their friends don't like them anymore. And there was one story in the newspaper about a mother who pretended to be a classmate of a certain young girl, and for whatever reason, she didn't like that young girl, maybe because her daughter was friends with her and they had a fight or something. Anyway, the mother pretended to be somebody and said all sorts of awful things about this other young girl on her Facebook page. And the young teenager killed herself. Yeah. Then I'm just thinking of other ways to harm people. There was another case in, what university was it? Rutgers, maybe. There were two young men who were roommates. One of them was gay. And he had another man in his room. They were having relationships. And the roommate set up a camera recording this and then spread it around to everybody. Yeah. The young man who was gay found out about that. He was quite distraught. They don't know whether how much this played into it, but not long after that, he also killed himself. So, you know, this, what I'm getting at is irresponsible use of the internet, either with, you know, what do you call it, webcams? Webcams, Facebook, texting, you know, doing horrible things to other people, but feeling like you're anonymous, so you don't need to deal with the emotional pain of the person that you're tormenting. Yeah? And this is now all possible due to the internet. Any of you work in IT? Yeah. Only one of you work in IT? I bet you that. Aren't you working in IT? You don't want to raise your hand. Just that one brave person. Yeah? But we need to look at that. How many of you are working in video games, making video games? Again, for young people, where, you know, they're shooting other people in their video game. Yeah? I mean, they have such amazing, violent video games now. That again, you know, before we had so much technology, you didn't have this. They think now, I forget what the statistics are, but young children see so many images of people getting shot and killed, even by the time they're 6 years old, even by watching violent movies, yeah, violent video games, And children become immune to violence just by watching it and it being so prevalent on the media. Again, brought to us by modern technology. Okay. Then, okay, the last one of a speech. Lie, so we had lying, creating disharmony, harsh words, then idle talk. Yeah. The internet can be really useful, and texting can be really useful, but what proportion of it is idle talk? Yeah, it's pretty amazing. What did you eat for breakfast this morning? I had congee. Oh, that sounds very interesting. Yes, I have it every morning. And then how much time is spent going back and forth? What I really like is we're leaving to go to to meet you at the restaurant. We're now halfway at the restaurant. We're now three quarters of the way to the restaurant. We're now looking for a parking space. How many tweets do you need to drive from point A to point B? Yeah? Many tweets that take up your time and the other person's time. Not tweets, texts. Yeah? Many, many. Yeah? That are completely useless. And then things that you've posted on Facebook, you know, some of them may be meaningful. Yeah, how many of you are posting this talk on your Facebook page? No, because nobody will watch it. So what do you post on your Facebook page? Oh, there's a shoe sale at this department store. Everybody go, did you watch this movie with this movie star? You know? What's the latest soccer score? So lots and lots of gossip, idle talk, yeah, through the internet, through your phone. Yeah. I mean, I'm amazed that there just aren't more accidents. Because I walk every day. I like to get exercise, so I walk. So I have to really pay attention when I walk. Because most of the people around me are not paying attention. Or put it this way, they're paying attention here. And they're walking down the street, you know, or walking wherever, you know, and they're like this. And, you know, I have to go to the right, and I have to go to the left, and I have to step out. You know, because they're not, you know, they're just on automatic walking down the street. Not caring at all, totally involved, you know, in the kanji. So, yeah, just amazing, you know, totally amazing. Okay, so those are the four of speech. Then we have three mental ones. We're almost done. I know this discussion gets hard. It's like, okay. So the three mental ones, coveting. Nowadays, modern society excels in creating coveting. Yeah? All the signs all around, wherever you look, telling you what you need to buy. Isn't it? And all the advertisements telling you how you are inferior unless you buy a certain product or look a certain way or go to a certain place on vacation. Yeah. All the advertisement, you know, the shopping, so many malls. Yeah, Singapore excels in this. So many malls, so many windows, you know, in the front, the showcase windows, with all the goods designed to make you covet. Yeah? Designed to make you spend money that you may not have. Designed to help you use more than your fair share of the world's resources. Brought to you by modern society. Yeah? Creating negative karma as you walk down the street, coveting everything that you see. Yeah? It's amazing. Then the next one, ill will. Again, we're encouraged to have ill will. Yeah? All of our governments make sure that we know who the enemy of our countries are and that we have ill will towards those people. We watch movies about violence and people, you know, deceiving each other. We're encouraged to have those same kind of emotions towards other people. And then sometimes sports, boy, sports can really bring out the kind of malice and ill will. Yeah? Like in Britain, you know, when they have these soccer games, and then some of the people get riled up and they start beating up on other people, depending on which team is winning and which team is losing. Yeah? So again, you know, we see this all on television. We get angry. We develop all sorts of ideas of how to harm somebody else. And then wrong views. Yeah, that's the last one. And again, through so much media, so much internet, people put their wrong views on and just spread them around. And even, wrong Dharma views are spread around. You have what people call charlatananda, yeah, a phony spiritual mentor, somebody who is presenting themselves as a spiritual mentor, giving you all sorts of wrong information about what the path to awakening is, and then innocent people believe it. They give these people a lot of donations. And these people teach wrong views and incorrect practices. But now with internet, you can do it. Yeah. So, morality in the modern time. Yeah, new and better ways to create the cause for a bad rebirth. Yeah. So we have to be really careful, really careful. On the other hand, they say that since this is a degenerate time, that all the virtuous actions we do are especially heavy. Yeah. So just keeping precepts in this degenerate time, they say if you keep precepts even for one day, you create as much good karma as people would create by keeping precepts for their whole lifetime at the time of the Buddha. Because things are degenerate now, so it's harder to keep the precepts. But when we do, yeah, we create so much more virtue. So it's really very, very beneficial to take and keep the five precepts. How many of you have taken the five precepts? Very good. Okay. Yeah, so we try that. How many of you have kept the five precepts? You'll notice that the fifth precept is not taking intoxicants. Okay. Nowadays, so taking intoxicants itself is not a naturally negative action, but the reason that it's one of the precepts is because when we take intoxicants, our mind becomes uncontrolled and we do all the other things. Okay? And nowadays, there's new intoxicants to take. You know, in old time, there was basically just some kind of alcoholic beverage. Yeah. Now there's marijuana, there's psilocybin, there's LSD, there's ecstasy, there's crack cocaine, there's all sorts of stuff, you know, opium, yeah, or heroin, I should say. That's the new one. It's an old one that's having a resurge of energy now. Yeah, but so many of drugs now, and abuse of prescription medicine. Yeah? I don't know if it's a... Is it a problem here in Singapore?
Yeah.
In my country, it's a huge problem. Yeah? People maybe get some oxycodone, a prescription for a painkiller, after they have a tooth pulled or after they have surgery. And they like how it feels. And so they very easily, get addicted to these pain meds and start writing false prescriptions so that they can get their pain meds. Also for Adderall, which is a stimulant that some college students started using, you know, to help them stay awake and study. Then, you know, now it's a big problem. It's addictive, and on college campuses especially. So new improved drugs to make you spaced out and more stupid. Yeah? New ways to make bad decisions in your life by getting intoxicated. Huh? So, you know, you begin to, when you look at things this way, you really see how important ethical conduct or morality is in your own life to have a happy life and in society in order to have a peaceful, sane society. Because in a society where people don't, abandon the 10 paths of non-virtue, you have chaos. Rampant chaos in society. So, you know, we have to be very vigilant, because ethical conduct is not something that can be legislated. You can pass a ton of laws, but that doesn't mean that people will necessarily follow them or abandon negative actions. It's an individual phenomena. It's like we have to really cherish ethical conduct ourselves, because we see the wisdom in abandoning non-virtue and the wisdom in creating virtue, not only to have a happy life now and not wind up in prison, but also so that when we die, we can die peacefully without regrets of having done a lot of non-virtuous actions, without fear that comes from creating a lot of negative karma, okay? So, you know, it's very important really to spend some time thinking about the disadvantages of non-virtue and the advantages of virtue, and spend some time really thinking about all these new ways we have of creating non-virtue, and, by implication, all these new ways of creating virtue. Because every time we abandon a non-virtuous action, that abandonment of it, that refraining from doing it, becomes a virtuous action. Okay? So every time you know you can lie, but you decide not to, you're creating virtue. Every time you're about to tweet something, not tweet, but text something really mean, you know, or tweet something really mean, but you refrain, then you're creating virtue. Yeah. So there's many more ways to create virtue now too, simply by having a very firm decision not to get involved in these different kinds of negative actions. Yeah. And so also that's why taking and keeping the precepts is so important, because whenever you are avoiding the actions that you promised in the presence of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to avoid, you are creating virtue. Okay. So there may be two people sitting here in this room. One has the precepts, one person doesn't. Yeah, both of them, hopefully, right now, are not killing or stealing or, you know, having unwise or unkind sexual conduct, lying or taking intoxicants. The person who has the precepts, who's sitting here right now, not doing those five, is creating incredible virtuous karma because of the intention not to do those actions, and they're following that intention and living up to it. Whereas somebody else may also be sitting here, but because you haven't taken the precepts, yeah, you don't have that firm intention in you to avoid those negative actions, then you're not creating that virtue. Okay? So that's why, you know, if you take and keep the precepts, it's so incredibly valuable nowadays. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, precepts, ethical conduct is a preliminary to develop concentration, which is a preliminary to cultivating wisdom. If we can't keep good ethical conduct, it's going to be very difficult to concentrate in our meditation, because we're always going to be filled with regrets and worries. Yeah. Whereas if we train in good ethical conduct, it increases our mindfulness, it increases our introspective awareness, and those two mental factors are very important when we want to cultivate concentration. Yeah, so ethical conduct helps us develop the mental factors necessary to be able to concentrate. Yeah. So there's so many benefits that come from ethical conduct. You know, not to mention that it's a cause for liberation, it's a cause for full awakening. And it makes your life so much easier. Yeah, if you look around, you know, why do people have so many problems in their life? Spend some time meditating on this. Think of your problems, the problems that you watch in your family and in your friends. Most of those problems revolve around people not abandoning those 10 paths of non-virtue. Yeah. Especially the speech ones, but also the body ones, yeah, the physical ones. When people don't keep good ethical conduct, so many problems in their life. You know, relationship problems, career problems, because they're not behaving properly. So other people don't trust them. So there's discord. So if you want to have good relationships with other people, best way is to keep good ethical conduct. And in addition, be polite. Yeah, really. I tell you, there's so much value in being polite. Saying please, saying thank you, saying you go first. Yeah. Here's another example from the newspaper. Okay, what about road rage? Yeah? Isn't road rage a lack of just common courtesy and manners, saying, you know, I'm gonna go first instead of you go first? Yeah? So how many accidents are there due to road rage? There was just an article today in the New York Times. One former NFL, the National Football League, football player, one famous guy, he's driving along, some other guy's driving along, the other, somehow there was road rage going on, especially on the part of the other guy, and the football player wound up getting killed. Yeah? Over what? Over who gets ahead, and you know, when you're going so silly, isn't it? Yeah, road rage is so dangerous. So this, you know, just common courtesy. Yeah, please, you go ahead. Please, let me help you. Being responsible when you have an appointment, showing up on time, or calling if you can't be there on time. So many small things that if we did them, we would have so, our relationships would improve a lot. Just look at the way you talk to your family members. Yeah. Who do you say the most awful, rude, cruel things to? Family members or strangers? Who do you lose your temper at and scream at and say whatever pops into your mind, true or untrue? Who do you say that to, family members or strangers? Family members, isn't it? The people you love the most, you treat the worst. Does that make any sense? Are you going to have a happy life with that kind of behavior? Uh-uh. So don't wait for your family members to change. You change. If you change, then the whole dynamic in the family has to change. All it takes is one person refusing to play the same old game, and that game can't continue. So you be the person who changes. Yeah? Even if a family member baits you by saying something that they know that you won't like, let it go. Don't react. Pretty soon they'll stop saying those things because you're not reacting. You're not biting the hook. Okay? So just small things can make huge difference in our life. Okay, so we have time for a few questions, comments?
Evening, Venerable. Maybe at times, living in a modern society, in Zara, we are expected to lie with regards to exaggerating our qualities. For example, if I want a job and I go for a job interview, I'm expected to exaggerate my qualities to the boss. If I'm dating a girl and I want her to marry me, I'm expected to exaggerate my qualities to the girl. And if I'm a salesman and I'm promoting my product, I'm expected to exaggerate my product to my clients. And if I'm want to be president of the United States, and if I'm Donald Trump, I'm expected to exaggerate my qualities to the people. So my question is, if I do all of this with a virtuous motivation...
What?
If I do all of this with a virtuous motivation...
What?
If I want to get a job to benefit us and what sort of karma would I create?
There's no such thing as doing those things with a virtuous motivation. Okay? It's a non-virtuous motivation, doing a non-virtuous action, creating the cause for a horrible rebirth. Yeah? And the thing is, you don't have to do that. Yeah? cares what other people expect of you? You be honest and straightforward. And if you say, but my boss wants me to lie, you know, my company expects me to lie, do you want to work for a company that expects you to lie? Do you want to work for a company that asks you to deceive the customers and clients? I wouldn't want to work for such a company. Yeah, I'd rather be poor than work for such a company. So you don't have to do those things. I had a friend who was an executive in Levi Strauss in Hong Kong. And I asked her this question about lying and cheating, you know, with your clients and customers. And she told me that if you do that, the customers, of course, they'll figure out that you're lying and cheating. They'll never come back to you. If you are truthful with them, they will come back to you. And in the end, your business will prosper. If you lie and cheat, they won't come back and they'll tell everybody else, don't go to that business. If you treat them honestly with integrity, they'll come back and they'll tell others to go to your business. So don't think you have to do those things. And also when you're dating, if you put on this whole thing of, you know, being Buddha boy when you're not... Yeah, women are not stupid, are they? Yeah, other people are going to figure out what you're doing and drop you like a hot potato. So don't try that one. Okay, let's have some more questions.
My question is, how do you cope with this creation against the one disabled? Because this society cannot cope with people who are disabled. That's right. In the Asian society. In the Western society, I've been there. They are more tolerant. But in the Asian society, when they see a person with disability, they avoid. And they discriminate. Like when I go for a job interview, I got discriminated everywhere. But it's okay. What you need to do is to have compassion towards the people who discriminate against you. Hope that they cultivate that compassion when they look at you.
Yeah.
Is that the way to do it? And I hope you can educate us on how to cope with discrimination.
Yeah. So how to cope with discrimination, you know, especially because of disabilities. Mm. Yeah, coping with discrimination, I think it doesn't matter whether it's over disabilities or race or religion or sexual orientation or any of those things, you know. It's a thing of helping making your mind calm and seeing that other people are ignorant so you don't get angry at them. But you also speak the truth and you don't let discriminatory statements just slide by. You stop and you speak out against them. I think that's quite important. Yeah. And so I think that's important not only for the people who are discriminated against to do, but also for other people if you see someone else being discriminated against, to speak up on behalf of that person. Yeah. And I think that is our responsibility if we're trying to be compassionate people. Because it could just as easily be us who's the person who is being discriminated against. You know? And we would certainly want someone else to speak up for us. And we need to also look in our own hearts and see how we discriminate against people or how we're afraid of people. Usually just because of old stereotypes, ignorance, lack of exposure to different people. Yeah, so to try and stretch our mind outside our usual nice little boundaries and realize that there's all sorts of people in society and everybody equally wants to be happy and not suffer. Thank you for raising that.
I love Tibetan Buddhist scientists. I can ask a question in the virtual reality. So I don't need to face you. So.
Oh, it's Manjushri. Okay, Manjushri, and you're just here around the listening cap.
Okay, my question is actually, if you're working with any jobs that doesn't know about any known facts of hazardous to the human being. For example, you are selling something like a chemical or plastics for food consumption. That may harm people in the future. Mm-hmm. You know, but it doesn't have any scientific facts about it. So if you are working or you are selling or you are manufacturing or even designing such stuff, what should we do about the job?
Okay, so you're working for a company that is, for example, selling chemicals that may be harmful to others, but they haven't done sufficient testing to see if it is.
You're right.
Yeah. If you and you're the one selling those chemicals, yeah. If in that kind of situation, if you believe that the chemicals could possibly be damaging, then either insist that, you know, your company does research to find out if the chemical is damaging, or get another job where you don't have that niggling thought in the back of your mind that perhaps you're engaged in doing something that could harm others in the future. Gee, Manjushri, stop talking to me. Okay.
Good evening, Venerable. We've talked a lot about morality, you know, for living beings, mainly for all mankind. But I believe it applies to people who are practice the Dharma on yourself and being monks and nuns. We learned from many of the learned person. So on the topic of morality, let's say if the learning from a master, and you know this master is very good with the Dharma, but you hear, let's say, a lot of negative stories about this person in terms of moral values, and there's no way you can find out whether it's true or they're not true. But you only realize that before, can we just focus on the Dharma and say, you know, this person says very good Dharma, but you can't verify the morality values of this person.
Okay.
So how should we approach this?
Okay, so in a situation where you're studying with a spiritual mentor and you start hearing a lot of stories about their insufficient morality, and yet you enjoy the teachings that they're giving. So how do you handle it? There are ways to do some investigation to see if the stories are true. With some of these, we call them charlatananda. They're charlatans pretending to be Ananda. you can go on the internet. If there are a lot of stories about someone, again and again and again, and people posting stories, then there just might be something true about it. You know, there's some masters that have a reputation for sleeping with their female students. Yeah, if there's a lot of stories on the web about this, yeah, and you hear these from your friends, chances are there's some truth in them. Yeah. If you are in a center, yeah, with a teacher, and then the teacher starts doing some strange things, and the people in the center start saying, what's going on here? Then you would maybe talk to the board in the center and ask them to talk directly to the teacher. Or you could also go directly to the teacher, but it's often more effective if there's other people involved and say, we've noticed this behavior, this is very troubling for us, you know. We don't want to be disrespectful, but out of respect for the Dharma, we need to raise this issue. And His Holiness Dalai Lama has commented on this, and he said we should do that. We shouldn't just overlook something. So if a spiritual mentor, let's say, is drinking a lot, yeah, and you can tell that, then... then you need to say something or get the board of directors of the center to say something. Yeah. Somebody told me once in the city where I was living, they were coming to the teachings I was giving, and they were also going to somebody else's teachings. And then they said, oh, so-and-so, he's a very good teacher, but you know, he passed out on the sidewalk the other day. And I really respect your morality, but I like his teachings. You know, and I'm like scratching my head, because if somebody is not walking the talk, then something's, you know, in a very gross way like that, and you're willing to put up with that kind of bad behavior in a teacher, then what's happening in your mind that you're willing to put up with that? Yeah? Because very often that these people are quite charismatic, yeah? And they have a nice way of talking, they draw you in, they make you feel important. But charisma is not one of the qualities mentioned in the sutras as being a quality for a good spiritual mentor. So you need to know what the qualities are, you know. First one is good morality. Second one is meditative experience. Third one is wisdom. Fourth is understanding, you know, the teachings well, and understanding a variety of teachings. Somebody who's compassionate, somebody who's truthful, somebody who wants to help the students, and they're not just trying to get a big entourage and a lot of offerings, but they really care about the students. So, you know, if you study any of the Lam Rim books, you know, which Geshe-la teaches here, there's a whole passage from the Sutra Alamkara that lists the 10 qualities of a good Mahayana spiritual mentor, and you should learn those, and then check it out. Check out the people, you know. And if something is fishy, you know, stay away. And if there's a teacher who, for example, speaks, or a group that speaks against His Holiness the Dalai Lama, stay away. Yeah? You don't need to get involved in that kind of thing. Okay?
Thank you.
Another question from upstairs. What? Is Kuan Yin talking to me now? Yes, Kuan Yin? Kuan Yin!
But no details far off to be exact, because he's male.
Yes?
Alright, so, okay, the question is, seeing how human beings are being harmed, so this question concerns about what the question just now asked about stepping up to say maybe this is not right. So what happens if you know that the party who discriminates say that he's going to harm you next, like he's going to punch you, all because he said don't do that, and he's going to punch or maybe you know kill or what? Then how? What should we do? Should we be altruistic in this case?
You know someone who's discriminating against you is about to harm you. Should you be altruistic and take a hit?
Okay.
What should you do?
So what should you do? There's many creative ways to deal with people who are about to harm you. Yeah? I mean, there's many creative ways. So try. What you want to do is have a compassionate heart, but you can certainly defend yourself, but try not to do something that's going to seriously hurt the other person. Okay, so we have to stop now? One more question. Okay. Yes, go ahead.
I was just wondering because in this whole talk we talk about people who are really like actively like breaking the precepts and all that. But I think for like many of us, like even as we practice Dharma and all that, like we struggle with a lot of things like, you know, like restlessness, being addicted to the phone. And like searching, it's not exactly like actively harming other people, but it's kind of like keep looking at like random things online, like things that you're kind of obsessed with, and you keep looking at the things. It's very difficult to stop, and also like your views on like watching pornography, because yeah, as in a way, like by watching, you're not exactly harming other people, but it can like feel very disturbing for mind, and you can feel quite like bad for doing it, like either being ashamed of yourself or like feeling bad that you could have been doing better things.
Okay, creating negative karma doesn't necessarily involve harming somebody else directly. Okay, so the example you brought up of watching pornography, yeah, you could say, well, they already acted it out, it's already on the internet. You know, I'm not causing them to do anything. But, I mean, the whole thing of demand creates supply. And second of all, what are you doing to your own mind? You know? I mean, what are you doing to your own mind? Why do you want to watch people do that? You know, you could go out and watch the dogs if you want to. Yeah? I mean, really? So, yeah, I mean, because like you said, I mean, it leads to a lot of bad feelings in you. And, you know, if you're in a relationship and you're partner hears that you're watching pornography, they're not going to be very happy. I've heard of several marriages that have really had a lot of conflict because one party, I won't say which one, but you probably know, is looking at pornography. Yeah. And the other one says, you know, I can't stand this, you know. This has got to stop. So, you know, again, you just think of, you know, if I do this, I might get some short-term pleasure, but I'm going to get a whole bunch of long-term problems. Is it worth it? Is it worth it? Yeah? So that helps us. So, you know, you brought up a lot of other things. We're restless. You know, maybe we overeat. That's not exactly, you know, fitting the strict definition, but it kind of is. You know? So the thing is just to pay attention. And the thing to do is figure out what behavior is the most damaging that you do. And work on stopping that one first. Yeah. And similarly with your afflictions, check out which afflictions is the one that causes you to do more damaging actions. Is it confusion or desire or anger or jealousy or arrogance, or, you know, figure out which affliction is the worst one for you, and then really focus in your Dharma practice about diminishing that one. Okay? So the grossest, most harmful things, yeah, they're going to be the easiest ones to work on. So start with those. Okay. So let's sit quietly for a couple of minutes. So I call this digestion meditation, so we can think about what we heard and digest it, and hopefully remember it and put it into practice. Okay, so here, think about the teachings you heard, especially the ones that regard actions that you really need to work on, and think about how you can modify your behavior. And let's rejoice at the virtue, at the merit we created as individuals and as a group this evening. And rejoice at all the goodness in the world, and rejoice at all the wholesome activities of the arhats and the bodhisattvas and the buddhas. And let's dedicate all this merit, all this goodness, so that the Dharma can exist in a pure form in our world forever. So that all sentient beings are receptive to the Dharma, and all sincere practitioners have long lives so that they have more time to practice and progress along the path. Let's dedicate so that in future lives, and in this life too, we always meet fully qualified Mahayana and Vajrayana teachers, recognize them and follow their teachings well. Let's dedicate for the full awakening of all sentient beings. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase for